Well, the door is always open here at the Internet Advisor, but right now it's open on the air for you. We have a whole hour until 6 o'clock to answer your questions. So we're hoping you call in with some good questions for us. We'd love to hear them and to try to answer them for you. You'd have to call 800-859-0957. We're going to take a short break and come back with Mike Brennan of MyTech News. Well, this is Gary Baker,
Edward Dell,
and Cal Carson,
and we're here for another hour to answer your questions. We normally have Mike Brennan from MyTech News, one of our partners, a great partner to have because he provides us with some great news about technology here in Michigan and on the Internet. Mike, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
So you guys are the three amigos today, is that it?
We are. You know, the Foster.
You're wearing sombreros in honor of Cinco de Mayo, or what's going on down there?
We're fosterless today, yeah.
Yeah, we are.
Fosterless, I like that.
It's more like the triad of trepidation.
I like
the gang
that.
Of three, you know.
Of course. Well, now of four, because you've joined us, and you join us every week at this time. And you talk about some of the headlines that you print on Friday for MyTech News, and we looked at a couple of them. The Chrysler self-driving minivan, that story caught my eye. Tell us about that.
Well, that's just been announced. So, I mean, I'm not a big... I know this is advancing in autonomous vehicles, the self-driving kind of... But I'm not on that bandwagon yet. I still think there's a whole lot of stuff we got to get over. But you have to start with working with real fleets, right? So Google's driven about 10 million miles or so. It's called it the beta test. Or actually, let's say alpha test. Now they're moving into the beta test with Chrysler, with the Pacifica hybrid minivans, and on a limited basis. But we're going to find out what these things are like on the roads. And, boy, I don't know. There's still a lot of work to go on this.
You know, a lot of times the car companies, they're really not sure if they can do this themselves, so they hook up with entrepreneurs, and May is a great time to hook up to entrepreneurs or with entrepreneurs because it's Entrepreneur Month.
Oh, nice segue, Gary. Very good. then we got that story from our good friends at Michipreneur.com, Amanda Luan, who's the co-founder of the Bamboo Detroit co-working space downtown. Anyway, I pick up some stuff from her, and she's really into all the entrepreneurial stuff on a much higher level than me, starting with Detroit Entrepreneur Week this week, May 2nd through 7th, so it just ended. And then we have a Tech Week that was also concurrent with that, and then coming up with Detroit Startup Week at the end of the month from May 23rd to 27th. So, I mean, with all the activities we have going on down in the Midtown, around the ballpark area with all the startups going on down there, this is perfect.
You know, a lot of the technology is around green technology. I put green technology and Detroit all together last evening when I volunteered for the Hightail to Ale run that started at Atwater Brewery. I was part of the zero waste group. Well, when I signed up, it sounded kind of cool. What it meant was I sorted the recyclable away from the rest of the garbage. But it was important, and it's fun to watch these guys. So many people, 2,000 people, came down and ran through the cities of Detroit, through the streets of Detroit, and what a wonderful event when things like that can happen. But I'm reminded that green technology really is a focus.
Yeah, absolutely. That's real big. It sort of hits the millennials. They're really into, think of the old hippies from the 60s. In a lot of ways, the millennials are just the recycled hippies. And a lot of those same values were earth and, you know, doing the right thing and all that. That's really important to millennials. And so green is where it's at. And there's a lot of ways we can do that with. I mean, here in Michigan, we already have all these wind power stations up in the Thumb area and elsewhere. We're now moving into green vehicles where they're a lot more fuel efficient. The autonomous vehicles will be a lot safer. I mean, it's really working here.
And it's not just this side of the state. Grand Rapids with AIM West is focusing on green technology, right?
Yeah, they have a big event coming up at the end of this month where they are going to be looking at the whole area. there's a lot of activity over on the other side of the state, actually, in that already. A lot of the auto suppliers are getting into, you know, building different components for these wind farms and other apparatus like that, solar panels, all that. And so they're going to be studying all these things at AIM West, and that'll be coming up on May 18th in downtown Grand Rapids. So that's for our friends on the west side of the state.
So, Mike, you not only our partner here, but we all get together periodically on your show as well. Tell us about your podcast real quickly.
Yeah, on Mondays from 3 to 4, I do it with my old competitor, now my partner in crime, Matt Rausch. A lot of people have heard of Matt. He used to be on that other station we cannot name.
Yep. The competitor and now we won, right?
He's come over to WJR. He's now with me. And so we do that from 3 to 4 live from the Podcast Detroit Network. And then it's available as podcasts in my Wednesday newsletter along with this show. A lot of other shows, Diva Tech Talk, Michigan Mobile Musings. We've just added the Small Business Association of Michigan, so we get Michael Rogers stuff now. This keeps expanding.
So they can go to mytechnews.com and not only get everything that you just mentioned, but this is all part of IT and the D's broadcast, what is it called? Podcast Detroit, right?
Podcast Detroit. They got 55 shows now. Do you believe it?
It's amazing. And I'm so happy to see how well that they've done and you've done. And this is all coming together. And we're all working together to help bring technology as a household name to the people here in Michigan and wherever else they can hear our voice. So
Co-opetition is the new buzzword.
Absolutely. Mike, thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Gary. Thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.
Okay, take care. Mike Brennan from mytechnews.com. Okay, stay tuned. We are going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back and talk to Timothy, Sean, and maybe you if you call us.
Foster is out today. He's on a well-deserved break. A matter of fact, he's celebrating a graduation of one of his granddaughters, I believe, at Central Michigan University today. So he's honoring her, and we gave him the time off to be able to do that because that's a great thing for him to do, and congratulations to his granddaughter as well. It's time for us to go and talk to our listeners, the folks who call in and give us our questions that we love to hear from them. And as Gary would say, give us the easy ones first because life goes so much easier if it's easy. But you can get those calls come in by calling 1-800-859-0957. That's 1-800-859-0957. And call early and call often. Let's go to our callers. Number one, Timothy, calling in. And hi, Tim. What is your question for the United Advisor?
Listen, thanks for taking my call. Before we talk about my problem today, I just wanted to give you some accolades. A couple of weeks ago, I called in about a MacBook Pro that I had that was freezing up when I did GarageBand, and you encouraged me to check out going with a solid-state hard drive and gave me the courage to try to do it myself, which I did, and it worked perfectly. It solved the problem. It's blindingly fast by comparison, so thank you very much. You guys are just amazing.
Well, thanks a lot. We're glad that we were able to help. And hey, you know, you just demonstrated or proven or with your testimonial said that, hey, look, you know, it's really easy to do if you apply yourself. What did you do? Did you like look at YouTube videos? How did you know how to do it?
I went to the YouTube videos. They're very, very clear step by step. I've been using YouTube videos to do things for a long time, so that was nothing new for me. But it was a lot easier than I had imagined. I built my own PCs, but I was always afraid to sort of open up the laptops and go there. But I did, and it worked. So thanks a bunch.
Yeah, it's easier than rebuilding a carburetor, I'll tell you. So.
No kidding.
Especially now.
Now, on to today's. I've got a PC that I upgraded to Windows 10, and it's been working flawlessly for me until just maybe in the last week. And now, after I put it to sleep, when I wake it up, it just that those little spinning dots, you know, they're spinning like in super slow motion, and it's like they're never going to wake up. So I have to do a Control Alt Delete, and then it reboots Windows, and or maybe it reboots the whole computer. I'm not sure, but then everything's fine. It reloads all of the you know, goes through its reloading program and it's fine. But
that's interesting.
This is something brand new to me, because other than previously, you know, I tap on one of the keys, it just wakes up and there I am.
That's interesting. Let's see, the first thing, so can you nail it down to a date, or did it start 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago? Because I'm wondering.
I would say it's just been like a week that I can think of. It's been days, not weeks, for sure.
Okay, and because one of the things I'm thinking of that you can try you could use the Windows 10 Restore. So I believe you get to that from the control panel under Backup or File History, I believe, and then you can actually restore to a previous date if you want to, and see if there's been an update or security update that Microsoft put on there, or a driver update that may have impacted it, that's causing the issue. So you can restore it back to, say, May 1st, as an example.
And, yeah, okay.
That's one method. The other method is you can go into the event viewer in Windows 10, and you get to that by going into the Start button and right mouse clicking on My Computer and selecting Manage. And there's an option in there going to Event Viewer, and I wish Microsoft made it easier. Actually, you can just select Start and then Search, and you can type in the phrase Event Viewer. And,
okay.
And then you can select System, and when you go through the system, because there's an Event Viewer for many components in Windows, but you want to look at the system events, and you might get an error message, which is described like with a red exclamation point at the time when the error happens. So the next time it happens, you look at your watch and you say it's May 7th at 6 p.m. and you can make a mental note of that. Then you can scroll through the event viewer and see if you had any errors at that point. It's quite possible that Microsoft will, there'll be something in there pointing saying this, your USB driver, was non-responsive coming out of sleep mode.
No.
Oh, okay. So even though I'm not getting an error message, there might be an error there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Microsoft's notorious for not providing disk error messages or any error messages, and you have to use the Event Viewer, which is very cryptic, to try to figure out what's going on. There's really not another Event Viewer, another mechanism that Microsoft provides to look at errors.
Now, does Windows 10 work the same way as the previous versions of Windows? Like, for example, if I get an update and I boot up my machine, it will say doing an update right now, these sort of things. Could it possibly
usually on shutdown, on a reboot or a shutdown, it will tell you.
Could it be possibly when he booted up, it was running and applying an update, and that's the reason why he was just seeing the circles go round and around for that whole time? And because every time he kills it and starts it up again, that's the reason why those circles start over?
That's possible, but usually Microsoft will tell you.
The circles are going really slow compared. You know, normally they're just kind of whoop-de-whoop. And it's not doing that. It's going like
really slow.
At one third the speed. They're just barely turning.
Well, okay. The other two things I can think of, besides the first two I mentioned, system restore to see if it was a software update or something that's been installed in your computer that's impacting it, or possibly looking at the error message, is run a disk check on there. So use your Windows 10 tools. Again, right mouse clicking on your C drive and schedule it to do a disk check. On your drive, because if you're experiencing a disk error, it'll have difficulty reading that information when it's doing, you know, coming out of sleep mode. Or there's two different modes. There's sleep mode and hibernation mode. When you put your computer to sleep, it stays in memory, supplies a little bit of electricity to, and it keeps everything in the silicon memory. But then after 5 or 10 minutes or maybe 30 minutes, it'll say, okay, enough of this. He ain't coming back. And I'm going to write all the information to the disk drive so that when you lift the lid, the first thing it does is it copies it off of the disk drive into memory and then prevents you or presents you the screen. So if you're experiencing disk errors, which again, Microsoft doesn't notify you if you're experiencing disk errors, it'll also give you that stuttering across the screen. So check for disk errors on your computer.
So I'll do a disk check and I'll check the system. Okay.
Yeah.
I can try all that kind of stuff.
Anything
else that doesn't work, I'll do a restore.
Yeah. Do the disk check first. That's really good to do anyways.
And that's sort of something to do like overnight because it takes a long time, huh?
Well, it depends on the size of your hard drive. It could take usually 45 minutes.
And oh, is that all?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, unless you have like a 5 terabyte hard drive.
No.
So, yeah, it shouldn't take, 45 minutes, but I wouldn't watch it. It'll drive you nuts.
Like watching dinner or something.
Yeah, like watching water boil, you know, it's just.
No, okay. You know, I go do something else while it does those kind of things.
And the other thing, and then hopefully the event viewer will point to a specific device, because if a computer's having difficulty coming out of sleep mode, then it's either a disk drive issue or a device driver is not waking up. So Windows is trying to say, turn on the keyboard or turn on this, the wireless network driver. And the wireless network driver is crashing in the background, and Microsoft says, try the wireless network driver again. So one thing that we do is go to the manufacturer's website or your computer and see if they have updated wired and wireless network drivers and even Bluetooth drivers for your computer. Because when you updated, it's possible that you're using Microsoft defaults and the manufacturer of your laptop has released updates because, and we see this at work all the time, because the computer has difficulty coming out of standby.
Well, it's PC, but the same thing applies.
Same thing.
It's still drivers.
So see if the manufacturer of your computer has updated Windows 10 software specific to your computer.
Timothy, thank you.
Hey, thank you. Guys, take care.
Oh, you too. We really appreciate
That was really technical. You know, those can be difficult to troubleshoot.
Well, and actually what people can do is wait until tomorrow night. We'll get the podcast up. It'll not only be here on our site, but also on Podcast Detroit and iTunes. But they can listen to the podcast and stop it and then answer, you know, go ahead and try something and then, you know, turn it on again. But they can take and pause it because that is a lot of information. And it actually, some of those suggestions that you made are things that people can use in a whole lot of different situations. Right.
System restore, check for disk errors, and then how to use Event Viewer.
That's, people don't, I'm going to have to figure out how to shut that off. I did.
Well, you can use System Restore. No, I'm just kidding.
If I knew how to reboot this this board, we'd be better off.
Where is Foster? Fabulous. You're doing fabulous.
The Event Viewer, though, is really something that is something that people don't know and don't use as often as they should. So we're going to take a short break. Why don't you call us and we'll answer your questions, 800-859-0WJR. That's 800-859-0957. There is room on the call list for you. And if you'll give us a call now instead of waiting till just before we end the show, we can answer your questions and probably help a whole lot of other people. So we will be back after this.
Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. This is Ed Riddell with Gary Baker, the Internet Advisor, and Kel Carson, our Mac guy. And we're in our tech support thing where our listeners can call in and ask us questions. And you can do that by calling 800-859-0957. And we have on line two, Ed from Livonia. And how can we help you on the Internet Advisor?
I'm trying to work on my wife's computer where her Juno gets a lot of pop-ups. And I got some help from Juno where they said to go into the Internet. I'm thinking Internet Advisor.
Well, going into the Internet Explorer, the browser window?
Yes, and I raised the pop-up too high. And it doesn't seem to have made any difference. On my own computer, on my Mac, I put malware bytes on it, and I stopped the pop-ups in my Juno.
Really, on a Mac? That's right, because malware bytes, they do make a Mac version of it, but I did not realize that they had a blocker like that. That's interesting.
Well, my question is... whether I can put some kind of blocker on there when there's Norton on the computer. Someone told me I couldn't because it would interfere with the Norton.
Well, you could go ahead and load malware bytes as well on your Windows computer, run it.
Do a performance scan, download it, install it, run it.
And then after you've eliminated the pop-up blocker situation, if you don't want it to collide with Norton, you just take it off when you're all done.
Well, it's not so much eliminating... the pop-up, like Malwarebytes does not provide a pop-up blocker. It blocks malicious software from going on your computer. It doesn't do ad blocking.
Okay.
So what it will do is scan your computer and Internet, I almost said Internet Advisor as well, Internet Explorer, and it will check it to see if there's been some programs add-ons or plugins that are maliciously installed on your computer that are causing these pop-ups. So Malwarebytes will actually scan your computer to see if you have Trojans or adware on your computer. Have you installed it on your wife's computer and tried to do a scan?
No. I was told not to by my son-in-law, who is smarter with this stuff than me, so I didn't do it.
No, Norton Antivirus is a good antivirus program, and it does what it's supposed to. But, you know, there's lots of different tools you can use to fix a car, and Norton will provide real-time protection, and Malwarebytes will scan for some things that Norton missed.
And Norton actually is an antivirus,
right,
where Malwarebytes just takes care of malware.
And it seems
they're different.
Right, they are different. And Norton and companies like McAfee and other antivirus companies are trying to, you know, incorporate a lot of the technologies that Malwarebytes uses to scan and find this malicious software. But, you know, sometimes they just can't seem to do it. You think they could, but they just don't seem to be able to find these things.
Sometimes you need a couple different ones maybe to find them all. But, Edward, the other thing that you can do is when you go to a site where there is a pop-up, there will be a little message that will say, there is a pop-up. You can, for this site only, you can allow them only once, or you can allow pop-ups from this site, and it will only allow the pop-ups from that particular site. So you can go ahead and do something like that. So if
Juno,
you find that Juno needs pop-ups, or if you find, I think your question was, would it stop the pop-ups from Norton, you can, when you do go to Norton and you see that there's a pop-up that it's somehow blocking, you'd be able to say, no, allow pop-ups from this site only.
Right.
And it is slowing Juno down.
Oh, yeah.
I get a note that says high CPU usage by Internet Explorer when those ads are going.
Okay. So you probably have
some malware on there.
You might want to try an alternate web browser as well, like Google Chrome or Firefox, that you can download. One of them, you can go to google.com and just say download Chrome or Google Chrome as an alternate browser, and you could try accessing Juno that way. You know, type in your wife's Juno credentials, try to go to the same website, and sometimes trying to use an alternate web browser may fix the problem. But I believe what you have is some malicious software that's been added on to Internet Explorer, and downloading Malwarebytes will probably clean that up. Cal, you had something?
I was just going to ask him, you did go into the actual Juno application on the toolbar and turn off pop-ups or click on the pop-up blocker menu?
Not in Juno, I didn't.
It's a simple three-step process. Once you connect to the Internet, then you click on the pop-up blocker menu on the Juno toolbar at the top of the screen, and a drop-down list will appear with the pop-up blocker menu, and then you click Block Pop-ups from this list, and Juno will now block all the pop-ups appearing on the computer.
Okay. Juno didn't tell me to try that, but I will.
Yeah, give that a shot. See how that works out for you.
Good suggestion. I didn't realize they had a pop-up blocker. Okay, Ed, thank you very much for calling.
Well, just as a reminder, I called about 20 years ago with my Model 666 Hewlett-Packard printer. I don't know if you remember that.
From that far ago, we don't, but thank you for calling us again.
And we had a lot of problems back then with those printers.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks, Edward. You take care. Let's go to Rick from Canton. Rick, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Hi, fellas. How are you today?
That's great. Great. What can we do for you?
Well, I've got Google Chrome loaded on my laptop, and for some reason, all of a sudden, I click on Google Chrome to get into my AOL account. It says, gives me my hard drive, you know, hard drive is C. Your side-by-side configuration is no longer compatible. I have no idea what that is.
I don't either.
So it pops up in Chrome?
Yes, when I try to access Chrome,
it'll
say your side-by-side configuration
is
incomplete or not correct, one of the two of those.
I bet you says side-by-side configuration is incorrect.
Right. That's okay. It.
All right. Yeah. That's interesting because I've heard people talk about it before. I don't know all the background to it. But it normally comes up when you're trying to install something. So it may be trying to install a plugin into Google Chrome at that particular time. You're getting that error, and that's because the operating system for Windows uses something called C++ runtime libraries, and sometimes there's conflict between those two libraries that will create that problem. So there is a repair program that you can run in either Windows 8 or 10 from the control panel. And if you run that program, that might resolve the problem for you so that you can then start it up again and it might work after
so
that.
So he runs repair on Google Chrome?
No, it's on the Windows operating system he's running repair on.
So there's a really good YouTube video that deals with this program. So if you go to YouTube and just put in, you know, Chrome side-by-side configuration error, it'll take you right to this video, and you can stop it. They'll tell you a little bit how to fix it, you know, pause it, go do what they tell you to do, then go ahead and start it, take the next step. So it's a real easy way to walk step-by-step through the process, and it'll fix it, I think.
And the best way to do this is watch the video all the way through first.
Oh, yeah, good point.
And then after it's only about 5 minutes. And then after you watch all the way through first, then restart it again and then walk through the process so that way you're familiar with what you're about to do.
Oh, great. Perfect. I was kind of confused. I thought maybe I fat-fingered something on the computer. It's like,
No,
I didn't do anything different.
Other people have this problem, too. So, and actually, by asking us, you allow us to help other people that probably have the same problem. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much, guys. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You too.
Let's go to Gary from Brownstown. Gary, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Thank you, guys. How are you doing today?
We're doing well, thank you. We've got just a short time before the break, but let's ask your question, and we may have to pause it and answer afterwards.
Okay. It's my middle name's Ever, by the way, but it's an iPhone question about my photo albums. My iPhone 4, a dinosaur, fell out of my pocket into a bowl of water, completely submersed. I pulled it out. I got some of the functionality back. To this day, my photos and my videos, some of which are near and dear to my heart, including my father who passed away in September. I can't get them out anyway. People have tried by hardware. They've tried sending them, you know, by internet. I guess I'm wondering, do you guys know of any way that somebody has the equipment to, you know, the data's there. It's just a matter of how do we get it out of the phone.
We'll have to call the FBI on that.
Yeah, they know how to hack into it. But, why don't we put you on hold?
Okay.
Because as we predicted, we have to go to a short commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to come up with a couple answers for you, maybe.
Okay.
This is going to be a little difficult one, but we'll stay tuned and we'll try to help you.
I know you guys can do it. Thanks.
Thank you. Well, welcome back to our last segment. While I have a chance, I want to thank Logan Stanifer, who answers our calls. We really appreciate Logan for doing that and helping line people up. And Eric Deutsch, who is our engineer. Thank you, Eric. Keeps us on the straight and narrow and pushes the buttons for us when I can't. So thank you to both of you that keep this show running very smoothly. We were talking to Gary about an iPhone issue. He had dropped it, his iPhone, into boiling water, actually recovered some things, but could not recover some of the photos. And Cal, this is an iPhone, so it's Apple. Can I ask you to take a stab at this?
Oh, sure. I'll take a stab at an Apple anytime. So, Gary, let me ask you a question. Is the phone functioning normally otherwise?
Some of it's functional. Sometimes it's not so functional. Like when I try and attach a photo to email messages, it won't go through. Sometimes when I receive, it's a hot mess. Sometimes when I receive text messages with, you know, images or videos attached, they won't play or they won't show up. I just got a dark screen. So, you know, I someone told me the logic board or the circuit board has probably been, you know, corroded, compromised. Some of the functions by the water.
Well, normally I would probably say that if it wasn't working at all, but because it is in fact doing some functions, you can make phone calls on it and that sort of thing. What I would suggest is a couple of things. Number one, do you have a Mac or a PC at home?
if you have a PC.
I would probably get download a copy of iTunes and from Windows for Windows and put it on my PC, connect the cable, and attempt to do an iTunes backup of the phone. That'll do two things. Number one, it'll give us another chance of being able to preserve that data that you love. And second of all, if you can do a backup, that's a good starting point. Once it's backed up, you might want to go ahead and initialize the phone, and that's to wipe it completely, and then reload the operating system on it, because I got a feeling it may be corrupted. And then once you've reloaded the operating system back on it, you can use the iTunes backup to restore your data back onto the phone and then see if you can access your photos. Even if you can't access your photos, at least you'll have a copy of them on the computer at that particular time, and you can go forward from there. If that doesn't work, then I would probably try a data recovery service like DriveSavers or someone like that. Call them and say, hey, do you do things like iPhones? Can you recover data off that? And you may have to send that to them and have them pull it back. Now, the price can vary anywhere from $100 to a couple of thousand, but it all depends on how important that data is to you is how much it's worth.
Now, are the photos actually viewable on the iPhone right now, or photos and videos?
Yeah, they are viewable, yeah.
Really? And when you hooked up a data cable or had someone hook up a data cable with an iPhone, usually you can then scan to the, go to the video and photos library on there and access them.
You can't do that the same way you do it on an Android phone.
Well, it depends. But you can, if you put iTunes in there, you definitely... Yes. Ken.
Okay. All right. I have my son looking at it. He's pretty computer savvy. He works for a telecommunications company, but it seems like it's showing that there's nothing recoverable or nothing to retrieve. So,
make sense, but if it's viewable on your phone, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So here's something you may try. There's a site called EaseUs, EaseUs.com.
EaseUs.
U.S., yeah. Right. EaseUs, okay. And they have an iPhone 4 photo recovery software package. It's free.
Oh.
There's both a Mac and a Windows version. You can take and download that and see if that will help you.
Yeah, but do the iTunes backup first, definitely.
Yes, definitely do that first. Okay. And then maybe this second, and then obviously you can start to spend some money to try to get those.
Right.
Right,
yeah.
It's probably worth it to you, I'm guessing. So
the data recovery service, I found a place in Southgate that they said they try it. They wanted $50 to look at it. They said that if we can't do it, you'll get your $50 back. And depending on what ends up happening, it might cost more than that.
Yeah, but so it sounds regardless, you're going to do that iTunes backup, install the software, download it before you even turn it over to them. That way, you at least have
what you have,
and then let them do their thing.
But then I would try this. There's an iPhone 5 data recovery tool as well, but you need the 4.
Oh, excellent.
EaseUs.com.
Right.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot, guys. You guys are great. I listen to you all the time.
Well, thank you, Gary. Thanks for calling.
Happy Mother's Day to everybody.
Thank you. Very good. By having Gary call and some of the other callers, they actually help us answer questions for them, but we can also answer questions for other people as well. Let's go out to Charlie from Dearborn. Charlie, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Hi, guys.
Hi. What can we do for you?
Well, it can't do anything for me, but one of the previous callers, he was having trouble with a lot of pop-ups.
Yes.
Yeah, when his wife was trying to play Juno or use the Juno application to play games, yeah.
Well, I don't know. I'm surprised you guys don't know about this program, AdBlock Plus.
Okay, you know, I gave up on doing ad blockers a long time ago, but my son was talking about AdBlock Plus, and
tell you, I've been using that, and that works like a charm.
Excellent.
And not only, what you can do is, you know, it's even got a feature on there where on particular sites, you can just be site selective of blocking the ads and everything. It's at adblock.org, I believe.
So here's some, I want to thank you for calling in, and certainly that suggestion has gone out to all of our listeners. I will tell you that I'm not a big fan of ad blockers, and that is because if we all started using ad blockers, it will cost us all a lot of money because the advertisers pay for our use of the internet. And if, just like ad blockers on television, you know, it will cease to become free anymore. Or when it is, when you do pay for it via cable, it will be more money because, again, you know, ads pay for it. And if they can't use them, and they don't reach the same number of people, it will then end up costing us more.
The stink that hit the news about 3 months ago when Microsoft said that their update for the Edge browser would include a pop-up blocker. Oh, my gosh. Microsoft had to, backtrack that real quick.
And it's a small price to pay instead of paying actual cash. But that will be what will happen if advertisers can't use this medium. So,
I say with this program, you can be selective on the websites. You know, I'll tell you, some of these websites, the ads are so obtrusive that you can't, to get whatever you want. You got to just keep on wading through the ads all the time and, shut them down.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. And I agree with you on some of that. So I understand why people like ad blockers. I just, I'm not a big fan of them myself, only because I know what will happen. So.
Well, Charlie, thank you very much. Now, I do have a question for you. Was that Internet Explorer based, or isn't that the Google Chrome one?
No, that's Internet Explorer. I think it might be good for Google Chrome, too. They were talking about making a version for that. But I don't know. I don't use Google Chrome, so... it's really good. It even puts a little icon down in the corner of your screen where you can click on it and say allow the ads to come through for this site and then turn it on or off. Or it's works for me, I tell you.
All right, Charlie. Well, thank you very much for calling. We really appreciate you calling in with advice, because sometimes what happens is not only do people call and ask questions, but they call and help us with the answers too.
So Gary, just to comment on that whole thing, I think it's a good balance out here in the whole internet world between us as consumers and whether or not we block everything, which we shouldn't, as you say, because eventually we're going to end up paying for it. But the responsibilities of the people who are advertising to not be so...
So obtrusive.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So it's got to be a good balance between the two.
And I think we're still doing that dance, right? There's some people that, and I don't use those sites, so.
We'll be dancing for a long time.
I think so. Yes, that's true. Well, folks, we have reached the end of our two-hour show here. Thank you for joining us here on WJR for the Internet Advisor Show. My name is Gary Baker.
Ed Rudell.
Cal Carson.
And happy Mother's Day to our wives, Tina Rudell, Cal.
That'd be Gail Carson.
And Carol, and to her mother, Eva, and my mother, Jean. So welcome. Thank you very much for joining us, and happy Mother's Day. Please come back next week. We're on from 4 to 6 in the afternoon on Saturdays. Foster Brown will join us again next week. We're here to answer your questions all week at internetadvisor.net. With that, again, wish you a very happy Mother's Day weekend.